space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. We're going to be talking about Spectre of the Gun today. Clay is here to talk about this one with us. How are you, Clay?
I am well, but your podcast is out of favor.
It's very foggy in here all of a sudden.
And by my floating brain, you will be choose the form of your destructor.
We're going to be talking about Spectre of the Gun, which is episode 6 of season 3, directed by Vincent McVitie. Written by Lee Cronin, which is a pen name for Gene L. Kuhn, aired back on October 25th, 1968. In this episode, having been found of trespassing into Malkoshian space, Captain Kirk and the members of his crew are sent to die in a reenactment of the gunfight at the OK Corral. So we got a Western on our hands. Me and Clay are going to take a break, play an audio clip, and then we're going to come back and break down Spectre of the Gun.
You claim you know us.
I ain't making no big claims about it to nobody. Just so happens.
Take a close look at me.
Yeah?
Who do you think I am?
Ike Clanton? Who do you think you are?
Well, I know this is hard to understand, but I'm Captain James T. Kirk of the spaceship Enterprise. These men are part of my crew. We're not really here. We're from the future. We haven't been born yet. Feel the material in my shirt. Now, feel the material in your own shirt. Do you notice any difference?
No.
Do these clothes look like yours?
Not exactly.
Have you ever seen clothes like this before?
Sure.
Where?
On the Clantons. You Clantons are always great with your jokes. That's why we like you.
I'm not joking.
Only difference between you and the Earps is that they never joke.
I'm not joking. I'm not Ike Clanton.
It's okay with me, Ike. Anything you say don't make no difference who I think you are. Your problem is, who does Wyatt Earp think you are?
Clay, I don't know if you're aware, the third season of Star Trek had some budget cuts.
You don't say.
If you're unaware, they actually cut the budget by quite a bit going into the third season. So you get a lot of things like Spectre of the Gun, which isn't to say it's good or bad or anything like that.
They definitely didn't cut the budget on awesome titles, because that's a great title.
It is a great title. I think TOS has the best titles out of all the Star Treks. They're really, we've talked about it before, they're really Pulp Fiction-y kind of great titles.
Which makes sense given the time that they were created.
Yeah. It's very, it's always a strong like verb or adjective and then a noun kind of thing, like Balance of Terror and Spectre of the Gun, stuff like that. But yeah, we're going to be talking about Spectre of the Gun. It's the Western episode of Star Trek Season 3, all that stuff. And I thought this one was interesting. I thought that I'm approaching a point in my TOS sort of criticism where I think things are changing for me. But how about you go ahead first and say what you thought of this episode?
Well, I actually really appreciated the budget cut aspect of it, because as soon as they got down to the Western set, I was like, oh, yeah, that's screams budget cut. But at the same time, I was thinking, like, how can doing what they did here be any cheaper than using one of the probably countless existing Western town sets? That, like, because at the time, there were Western TV shows up the wazoo, or at least there had been, so those sets still existed. I'm surprised it was cheaper to actually do what they did.
It must be a whole rental aspect. You must have to just pay a lot to rent those spaces. I know that, you know, shooting on location is the most expensive, and then the sets, and then I guess this sort of a half of a set or anything like that.
Yeah, but I guess now that I think about it, the actual amount of space they're using in this episode is very small.
Yes.
As opposed to, you know, what they would have if they were using a full town or whatever.
I think you can see three walls in almost every single shot.
Yeah. Like
it's a really basically small area.
But I actually really liked what they ended up doing. I liked the idea of the not fully rendered version of the past. It had a cool look to it. It reminded me, we had talked briefly the other day about doing an episode of the Prisoner podcast that we had done, comparing this to an episode, Prisoner episode called Living in Harmony, which is also a Western episode. And I couldn't help but think about that show when watching this, because the way that they handled the set felt a lot more in line with the Prisoner than Star Trek, because it was more sparse and more surreal than Star Trek usually goes for. That being said, I think the story is not very good.
Yeah. Well, that'll lead into my sort of I've settled into like the Star Trek criticism, or like the sort of Star Trek like mindset that I think you need when you're watching these episodes.
Uh-huh.
And I really like this episode. Because I think that it does a lot of things well for this series. Well, it also has several of the faults that the series never seems to be able to stop getting into. Like you said, I love the way that this one feels. I love the way that it's directed. This episode's directed very well. Note to Patrick Stewart, who directed Fistful of Datas and did not manage to get a single Western shot out of the entire production.
Yeah.
McAveedy really shoots this well. There's a lot of the fingers tapping guns and camera angles that are shot from behind sort of people's holsters and things like that.
Yeah, from what I've gathered, especially in this time, like the time when this was produced, the guys doing these Western episodes were just an excuse to do all that stuff, because these guys seem to love all that stuff. And even in The Prisoner, it's the same way, where anything I've read about the episode, they were like, yeah, we just really wanted to do a Western.
Right. Which is weird that I was thinking as I was watching it, it's such a broad yet narrow genre at the same time. There's like it's mostly all the great Westerns are kind of built off playing off of some aspect of the Western.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Unforgiven, the Clint Eastwood movie, is kind of it's not a parody or a satire, but it's kind of the, like, what happens when gunslingers retire, basically,
right,
kind of a take on it.
Right, right.
And it's funny because it's such a specific setting, but you can actually do a lot with it in that setting. And I think that if we do a Prisoner podcast or a breakdown, I think that it's interesting that the two shows, I think, do a good job of representing what each show is about in terms of their episode, while also being a Western at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, what's great about the Western is it's very, I think the reason that it is so wide open is because there is really a pretty rigid archetype that is the formula for a Western, and going outside of that formula or putting a twist on the formula, it gives you a lot of interesting options.
Yeah.
So that's when you can get into more of the different takes on things and really kind of widen the scope of what you can do with it.
Yeah, it's a good sort of, not a fallback, but it's a good genre to put other genre TV shows into, because people can always it's a developed enough genre where there's roles for everybody. Here they're basically playing off of already historically known characters, because it's the Cowboys, right, versus the Earp, the gunfight at the OK Corral.
Interestingly, though, I found kind of curious that they really play the Earps as the bad guys.
They do. I wrote that down as a note. It's weird that the Star Trek crew are put in as the Cowboys, and the Earps are basically seen as the sort of bad side of this whole thing, which I guess is, I was doing a little bit of a review. I guess the Earps are kind of, it's not quite as black and white a conflict.
Yeah.
As a lot of the sort of mythology of the Earps goes.
Yes.
I don't know how far, I didn't get too far into it, but I guess it was kind of popular at the time to switch it back to make it seem like the Earps were the aggressors against the Cowboys.
Really? That's interesting. Yeah, because most of the movies that I know, well, any of the movies that I can think of about that story, always put the Earps as the hero, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
I mean, not even like your Tombstones, but like movies of the time like Darling Clementine and Gunfight at the OK Corral, which I believe DeForest Kelly is in.
Yes, yes, he is. Yep.
They both present the Earps as the heroes and the Clantons as the aggressors or the dirty cowboys.
Yeah, they do. They flip it around here, which is an interesting angle to go with. I think just because they have to come out, they have to be in the position of the losers, right?
Right.
Before this
right.
is all said and done. Right. So, yeah, the basic breakdown is that the crew goes to a planet where they're trying to make first contact with this race, and the race gets annoyed because they don't want them to be there. So they send the crew down to this planet where they dig into the brain of Kirk, and they come up with this sort of judgment system where they're going to make an illusion out of Kirk's memory and then sort of punish the crew through it. So they pull up Tombstone, Arizona at the gunfight at the OK Corral. For some reason, Kirk is thinking about that, and that's the idea that they go with. They explore the town. They have kind
of... could have been the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, I guess.
They explore the town. They have sort of a bunch of non sequitur stuff, and then it wraps up with the gunfight where it's revealed that it's an allusion to the sense that if you don't believe what's happening to you, it actually is not happening, which is interesting. And then everything's fixed. They survive the gunfights, and they'll go off on their merry way, and the Melkosians, or whatever they're called, actually want to be a part of the Federation at that point. Yada, yada, yada.
Fun piece of trivia. The probe thing, the voice of the probe thing is actually James Doohan.
Yeah, he's been doing that a lot in this series. There was another episode I just watched where he was the voice of it.
Very, very versatile voice actor, apparently.
Yeah, very good. He's no Chekhov or Walter Koenig. But I think that the – I think my big – what I was talking about before where I'm starting to see the TOS system, right, is that a lot of – TOS episodes to me feel like the writer didn't outline the story before he just started to write it. He just like sat down and he's going to start from the beginning and he's going to write his way all the way to the end.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the biggest flaw here is that there's not really a central point to what's going on. It's really just kind of a bunch of here's the inciting incident, here's a bunch of sort of non sequitur stories that shoot off of it, and here's how we're going to resolve it. And it feels very much like the writer's like, okay, now I'm in this position, but I got to get over here, so I'm just going to change something to make this happen. The most egregious of this, I think, is Spock's realization that this is an illusion, and therefore Chekhov isn't really dead. He figures that out with very little evidence, to the contrary. And it also doesn't make sense because why was Scotty not knocked out then? Because Scotty believed that what was going to happen to him was the gas grenade was going to knock him out, and he didn't get knocked out, and they figured it out somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a lot of those logic problems. The biggest one for me is when they first show up and they look around the town and they notice that the town is incomplete, and they're talking about how, it's a incomplete construction
memory.
Of the town because they're basing it off of incomplete knowledge to create this thing. But then they start talking about the OK Corral and all that kind of stuff, and Spock is like, well, we can't change the past.
Well,
motherfucker, you're not in the past.
Right.
You're in the holodeck. You're in the holodeck of a program that hasn't been completed.
And they'd also, what's also funny about that is when they first get there, Spock is like, I'm unfamiliar with this portion of Earth history. But then later he knows everything about that portion of history. So that felt like it was just kind of, it felt like it was the wrong line for Spock at the beginning. Because I kind of accept that Spock kind of has like a Data aspect to him at this point in the series where he knows everything for some reason.
Yeah, that definitely felt like Data when he started saying that
stuff. It's a little bit silly. It's that kind of a logic problem. And
also, apparently, Uhura speaks Swahili, which I didn't know.
Yep, that's a callback. They've mentioned that a few times. Yes. Is Swahili, I don't know if, I guess it's my ignorance about what Swahili is. Swahili is a regional dialect, right? It's not limited to a country or anything
I mean, you're asking the right guy. So, yes. I don't know.
I think the episode's kind of filled with sort of logic problems like that. But at this point in my TOS experience, I really like the fact that this is such a stylistic episode that was kind of fun. And I enjoyed watching it. And going into our conversation that we continued with Spock's brain, right, where you were talking about that article you had sent me that sort of broke down that Kirk is not the sort of cultural understanding. We've been examining this a lot, where like the main character of a popular series is not really what the popular consensus of him is.
Right.
This is like a prime example episode of Kirk not being the gunslinging rogue, character, right? He spends the entire episode, he basically gets into trouble because he's so adhering to his regulations that he ignores the warning buoy to go talk to the people on the planet.
Right.
And then he gets down there and he is trying desperately to avoid a fight with the Earps.
Which I found really interesting because maybe this plays into what you're talking about, the writer not really outlining stuff, because it's like everything about this as I was watching it was saying to me, this stuff isn't real. You could solve this problem. Just shoot them.
Right.
Like there's no, like, I think what's missing from the episode is that sort of like condemnation of I guess they kind of give it to
they,
you.
They do it much later. They do it much later where they try to imply that the episode is about Kirk coming to terms with having to kill something, right?
Yeah.
And that feels okay, but I don't get that impression early on. It seems to me more like he just doesn't want to. It seems like he doesn't want to be killed, basically, at the start of it.
He's going so far out of his way to, like, you know, he says at the beginning that they come in peace, but they will defend themselves. But knowing that they're being set up to be killed, he goes so far out of his way to avoid fighting that it feels like actions that should be dictated by like a preconceived notion of what he will do.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's the kind of thing Q used to do where he'd be like, well, you humans are so barbaric that, you know, you'll just kill things at the first, you know, that kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah.
And then Picard then goes out of his way to show that that's not the way that they are. And they kind of do that a little bit with that first, when they send them down to the place initially, but I went back and I listened to it a couple times to listen to what the floating brain was saying, but even there, he wasn't really clear.
Right.
He was just sort of like, you guys are sort of savage, so savage will be the way that you die, or
yes,
something.
It's, yeah.
It's there's no driving principle, at least on the surface, as to why Kirk doesn't just be a little bit more aggressive.
No. I honestly got the impression that he was a little bit scared of what would happen, because I think he has a line in the middle where he's like, "We're not skilled with pistols. We won't be able to handle ourselves like this." And it comes across as, it's interesting to me just because it's certainly it flies in the face of what you think Kirk would be doing in this opportunity. I wouldn't say he comes across as like cowardly, but he's certainly not willing whatsoever to get into a violent confrontation with them.
Yeah.
And I think that it's neat, and it's also a very in line with what the narrative of Star Trek always is. Like, a lot of the episode is just them trying to solve the problem and not coming up with any good answers as to how to get out of the problem. And it's very different from what The Prisoner did with its episode, where this is much more of a Star Trek, the group of characters are trying to solve the problem that they're stuck in this predicament with. They use a very science-y thing to try to fix it. Mm-hmm. And at the end, it comes out to be sort of an accepted Star Trek thing, the mind meld, is what allows them to break out of the spell and then resume. And then they're all friends at the end. And, of course, everything's hunky-dory.
Right.
Yeah, it's tough. And I think that it's a good sort of just antithesis of what the Kirk character is. It's like, this is just going to be a prime example of showing somebody that Kirk isn't always what you popularly think him to be. And I think that helps the episode out a little bit.
Yeah, I think so too. The thing that feels weird to me, I think, is that I feel like maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like having both the bullets be fake and history be changeable kind of hurts the story.
Okay.
I feel like it should be one or the other, because they like it, or at least. Like,
do you feel that it's just really like, would that be along the lines of, do you think that the historical event is not closely tied enough to what's the conflict of the episode in a lot of ways?
No, I think what's bothering me is that if they find out that they can change the outcome, they don't really do enough to try and do. Like, there's
I see what you mean.
There's no driving. It feels like there's no driving force towards the inevitability of getting killed at the OK Corral.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, like, if you can change the outcome, then
why not try to change that?
Yeah. Why not try anything? Why not try, you know, like, oh, well, we know they're not going to be there for another 3 hours. Well, why don't we go do something and try to catch them, and, you know, outside of their programming, if you're thinking about Westworld kind of logic.
Right. Like why don't you try to kidnap, like, Morgan Earp or something?
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
To set it off the direction that it needs to go or something like that.
Yeah. Like, there's no driving, for lack of a better term, ticking clock. Well, I guess there is literally a ticking clock because they have to be there at 5 o'clock. But, if you can change stuff, that kind of takes the driving nature of it away.
Right. I know what you mean, and I think that ties into that's kind of my outline, no outline criticism. It's like you came up with a reason, but then you just changed it a couple scenes later as to why this would be happening. And now you're going to turn it into something about, like, we can change the past into a story about, like, this is all fake. As long as we don't believe that it's happening, it's not really happening.
Yeah, yeah. There is a ton of stuff in here that feels like he was just, like, he was getting ideas as he was going along and never bothered to go back and rewrite it and tie them together.
Like, I mean, why does Kirk do the double-footed dropkick at the end? If none of this is real, why even bother fighting the illusions?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Which, I love that dropkick, and I love that fight scene. They sped it up a little bit or something, so it's a little bit stylized. But
yeah, like, you know, if you're going by what the point that he's trying to make by, well, like, yeah, I guess if you're going by the point that Kirk is trying to make by not fighting or not shooting, then them just standing there taking the bullets or the, you know, allowing themselves to be shot should really be the end of the confrontation.
Right.
Like, that should be what signals to whoever's in control that, oh, wait, they're not what I thought they were.
Right. Yep. Yeah, they
but
they
you got to have your gratuitous. You got to have a gratuitous ass beating in there. So,
right.
Although they had a couple at that point, I think. Maybe not.
In the episode or
in the episode, yeah. Chekhov gets shot. Maybe that covers it. I don't know.
Yeah, a little bit surprising that Chekhov gets shot.
And that stuff too. That again, that feels like what you're saying with the no outline, because they just all of a sudden they're just back on the ship and Chekhov is like, "Hey, guys, that was weird, huh?
I remember that girl. I don't remember anything else. Yeah, yeah." I mean, it's a lot of scenes like that. Just the scene where Chekhov's making out for 5 minutes while Kirk's like, excuse me. but I do love the so what do you think the episode's scattershot, but what do you think like if you had to define like the theme of the episode, do you think there is one, or do you think that it's too scattershot to pin anything down, or do you think there is actually like a central spine to what the point of it was?
I feel like if there is one, it was added afterwards.
Okay.
It feels like doing a Western for the sake of doing a Western, and then, oh, we can make a commentary on, you know, being anti-violence or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that I did want to talk a little bit about the stylistic stuff, because I...
Also, sorry, I really liked when Chekhov was like, no, it's fine. He can shoot me if he wants. I'll just jump out of the way of it.
Right. Chekhov's apparently not up to date with a lot of what was going on at that point in history. He's more concerned with the Soviet Russian landscape than he is about the Wild West of America and all that stuff. I think the reason I really like the episode is that it's so stylistically strong in a lot of ways. I think it's really directed very interestingly. It's
Red Sky is awesome.
Yeah, the Red Sky is awesome. Even the shots in the beginning on the bridge are angles that I've never seen on the show before, which I always appreciate in these kind of shows. The Red Sky is awesome. The stormy weather at the very end at the shootout is awesome.
Yep.
And I like the like you were saying, the sort of half-finished Western town. It kind of fits into why I like the Royale from TNG a lot. Like, it's...
Oh, yeah.
They came up with a good narrative explanation as to why the town looks like this. And it makes a lot of sense in terms of the story.
Have you ever seen the Lars von Trier movie Dogville?
No, I don't think so.
No? It has a similar feel to it. It's done in this sort of minimalist theater way, where the town, it takes place in a town that's really just like a one one road drag of like maybe a two blocks worth of houses.
Yeah.
But it's all presented very much like this, where there's only specific sections of the buildings are created, and so you can see into a lot of the houses. It's a really cool, really cool effect, which they also kind of did in The Prisoner a little bit, in the second to last episode, where it's just number six and number two off. It's that very minimalist black box theater kind of thing.
Sure, yeah.
It's a really cool look. And I was thinking about it, how you don't really get this kind of thing anymore. I don't know if it's just stylistically passe, but like if you had a TV show now that had their budget slashed, this is not the route that they would go.
No.
I don't know what they would do. I don't. It would probably end up being like a bottle episode or something, but you wouldn't get this sort of like, let's do something cool with what we have to this extent where it feels a lot more like theater than it does television.
And it's funny. I mean, maybe it's just the fact that when they write these episodes, the older 60s TV feels more like theater. Like, the scripts are written more theatrically and things like that. Like, it's a lot of sort of staying in one scene and sort of talking to each other and stuff like that. So I think that the shooting it with, like, a black curtain in the background actually makes it feel natural in a weird way. Like, it's sort of, this belongs in this kind of a setting, the way that we're writing these stories.
I think you're right. Because, you know, at that point, TV is still, it's still very much has a theatrical feel to it. I mean, and there's a long tradition of doing theater on television in the early days of television.
I mean, does any drama nowadays not shoot on location? Does any drama shoot on a sound stage like that? Outside of like certain scenes where maybe it's easier to do? I can't think of any that would shoot anything like that. Like sitcoms do it nowadays.
Sitcoms do it a lot. Dramas? I guess it depends.
Obviously shows like, I'm just going to say ER. I know it's not on anymore, but like that has a set that is designed to look like a hospital. But I can't think of anything really popular nowadays that does that.
The a lot of the DC comic shows have sets.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah,
where they usually the structure for those is usually not entirely dissimilar to something like Star Trek, where it's they have their team of pals that all work together, so they have like a central hub that they work in.
You're right, yeah.
But they all take place in cities, so there is a lot of like, you know, we have our command center Batcave sort of set, but we also are kind of out and about in the city anyway.
Right, every city looks like Vancouver in Canada.
Yeah, yes. It's because they all shoot in Vancouver.
Yeah, yeah. Tax breaks, cha-ching.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think the style of the show suits that kind of a script and everything. I just like the way this one looked, and I thought everyone did a good job in it, except for the one scene where Kirk is talking to the sheriff might be the most overacted scene I've ever seen in my life.
That was pretty intense.
Both of them were dialing it up to 11 on that
one. There's a scene in the first season of Miami Vice towards the end of the season where they have this big two-parter where Tubbs has flown to Costa Rica or something to track down the guy who killed his brother. And while he's there, he falls in love with this beautiful woman. It turns out that she's the daughter of this, you know, drug dealer. And there's this big, you know, blowout where she finds out he's a cop. And he confronts her about the fact that her dad killed his brother and all this kind of stuff. And it's like one of the most over-the-top acted things I've ever seen. And you can tell that these two actors, who are fine, they're fine generally, but they don't entirely have what it takes to pull this off.
Right, yeah.
But they're just going for it anyway. And it's the same kind of thing where it's like it's a lot of screaming and a lot of passionate yelling, and you can tell that they feel like they're nailing it.
Yeah.
But it's a little much. And this scene has reminded me of that a lot, where it's like Shatner at his most Shatner-y and, you know, 60s character actor at his most 60s character actor.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, I think we've talked about this one a good amount of time. We're going to play an audio clip. Me and Clay are going to come back, and we're going to break down our final thoughts and feelings about Spectre of the Gun.
Spock, you've got something?
A fact, Captain. Physical laws simply cannot be ignored. Existence cannot be without them.
What do you mean, Spock?
I mean, Doctor, that we are faced with a staggering contradiction. The tranquilizer you created should have been effective.
Would have been effective anywhere else.
Exactly. Doctor, in your opinion, What killed Mr. Chekhov?
A piece of lead in his body.
Wrong. His mind killed him.
Well, come on, Spock. If you've got the answer, tell us.
Physical reality is consistent with universal laws. Where the laws do not operate, there is no reality. All of this is unreal.
What do you mean unreal? I examined Chekhov. He's dead.
But you made your examination under conditions which we cannot trust. We judge reality by the response of our senses. Once we are convinced of the reality of a given situation, we abide by its rules. We judge the bullets to be solid, the guns to be real. Therefore, they can kill.
All right, everybody. So here we are with our final thoughts and ratings for Spectre of the Gun, a well-titled episode that I think does a pretty good job of getting its point across with a fighting budget cuts and all that stuff, which is really apparent in this episode, how little money they have. I think the worst scene is really when they beam down to the planet. They're like, it's so foggy, we can't see anything. There's literally nothing down here but fog.
There was a lot of that stuff where, like, you don't see them beam down.
Yes,
it's all
fog. You don't see them beam down, which is, I was thinking about it, it's like, that must be just a huge special effects money saver for them. Yeah.
And the when they get sent to the Old West and when they get sent back to the ship, all they do is, like, this freeze frame push-in.
Yeah. They do it when they, when Kirk is in the bar, he's going, no matter what happens, at 5 o'clock, we're not going, and then it does that, and they just appear in the OK Corral.
Yeah.
So, guys, if you watch the episode and you want to rate it and you're on YouTube, you can click in the little upper right-hand corner of the video. There's a little gray circle. Click that. A poll will open. You can vote on our 1 to 5 scale about what you thought of this one. Clay, why don't you go first? Let us know where you're going to put this guy.
I'm going to give this one a 3.
Okay.
I like the surreal aspect of it. I love the idea of the incomplete representation of the Old West. My only thing I wish they had done differently is I wish there was some stuff that was just wrong, you know, like the aliens,
historically wrong.
Yeah, like the aliens didn't get the details exactly right or something.
Like, why not just play other parts of Kirk's memory into it, right? Like, shouldn't he see people that he knows in town and stuff like that?
I think if you get into that stuff, it probably turns into a different episode.
It does.
But you know, just something like, where like the bartenders, the doctor is serving beer, or just like, you know, just like details that they didn't get correct,
right?
So it's kind of just, you know, flaws in the matrix kind of thing.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm surprised they didn't do anything like that.
I think overall it's very watchable, and it's, you know, the story doesn't really hang together that well.
No, it doesn't.
Visually, it's cool, and you know, if you don't like Chekhov, you get shot halfway through. So.
I'm going to give it a 4 because it's. I think that you had mentioned this before at a certain point. TOS episodes feel a little bit more samey than a lot of the other series do, mm-hmm. mostly because they're stuck with basically the three leads, right? Who have to. They always kind of come up with the same hashing out of every single problem. Like, it's always like, this Spock's going to be the logical one. Kirk's going to be the mediator, and Bones is going to be the emotional one. They don't really mm-hmm. fall back on that here, but the show, I always appreciate it now when the show branches itself out a little bit. And I think that they do a good job when they try to try something new with the story. Like,
yeah.
Even though this is yet another example of meeting a superiorly powerful creature that is putting you on judgment, you know, they've done this like every single other episode for the past couple episodes, but it works here. I think it looks nice. Everyone does a good job playing it up, and it's a fun genre to sort of dig into. So I'm going to give it a 4. I enjoyed watching it, which is nice.
Yeah, I would go 4 if the story hung together a little better.
It is sloppy, isn't it?
Yeah. I guess it's tough for me because I haven't been watching every episode.
Yeah. You should.
And
yeah, I'm not going to tell you to watch TOS, but this episode reminds me of, what the hell was it called? A Private Little War. A Private Little War might be the weirdest episode of Star Trek if anyone wants to go back and watch that one. We podcasted about it, but this one reminds me sort of A Private Little War. It's the series. The series kind of is like, I don't have anything to talk about anymore, so we're just going to do a bunch of weird shit and see how it all hangs together.
Nice.
And, which is shocking that they've only started to do this after two seasons, basically. Yeah. But they're at this point.
Yeah. The I was thinking about it after I gave my rating just now, and I don't know if I've given a 2 or a 4 for TOS.
Oh,
I
think interesting.
I've just been given 1, 3s, and 5s. Please correct me. I don't remember.
You did.
What
you
happened
gave,
20 minutes ago?
Conscience of the King. You gave a 2.
Okay.
The Shakespeare.
I guess I haven't given a 4. I don't think I've given a 4.
No, you've given a couple of 5. Yes, you thought Doomsday was a 4. You didn't think it was a 5.
I'm sorry. I don't remember. What show is this? What's the name?
This is the Prisoner Podcast, where you've been giving
welcome
all the
back
Prisoner
to the Prisoner
one.
Podcast, where we're going through all the episodes of The Prisoner.
Talking about how they're not quite Star Trek episodes.
Hey, that's a new take to continue the Prisoner Podcast, yeah.
I wonder which episode came out first, Living in Harmony or Spectre of the Gun?
What year was this?
So, this is 68.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
So I'm going to look at Living in Harmony.
I feel like...
October 25th, 68.
Ooh,
67 was Harmony.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say, I couldn't remember if The Prisoner went into 68 or not.
Yeah, this aired, The Prisoner aired 29th of December, 67.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. But people should check out The Prisoner Podcast. Check out Living in Harmony. It's one of my favorite episodes of that show.
Yeah, it's very, for some reason, highly underrated, and people kind of don't like it.
The episode?
Yeah. And I think we both knew that going in, and we were both really surprised by that coming out. I think it's because it seems like a throwaway episode because it's so different from the rest of the show. But then once you get into it, it's like, oh, they're actually saying something pretty interesting here.
Yeah, and I think it's the perfect application of the Prisoner idea. Like,
yeah,
I always appreciate when that show got a little bit less nuts and boltsy about what living in the village was about and took it more into like a mental state of mind. We got an email from someone named Luke, I think, who said that he's been listening to the Star Trek podcast and enjoyed it. And he got into The Prisoner because we did that podcast. And he said, thank you for introducing him to The Prisoner. So there you go.
Thank you for listening, Luke.
Yeah, thank you for listening to all the shows. Guys, thank you very much for listening to this show where we talked about Spectre of the Gun. I gave it a 4. Clay gave it a 3, as he gives every single episode of every single show that we've been watching. And... yeah, I'm going to
living in my own feedback loop.
If you guys enjoyed the show, a like and a comment's appreciate on YouTube, iTunes, rate us on there, rate us on all the podcatchers that you listen to, helps get the show out there. Facebook.com/ThePenske Podcast, Patreon.com/ThePenske Podcast. A couple dollars a month gets you extra content. You get 2 podcasts a month if you give $2 a month. And me and Clay are just about to wrap up our 5 favorite dramas. We did that last week. And 5 favorite comedies, television comedies, so that will be going up very shortly. So check out that. Thank you very much for supporting the show on Patreon. We appreciate it very much. Hopes everything go by. Clay, do you have anything you want to say before we log off?
I don't think so. How many more episodes do you have?
There are 5. I think there are maybe 4 left. Yeah, we're coming up to the end of TOS. So
I'm going to start prepping now for... Star Trek the Motion Picture.
Yes, everyone. You have to. Well, I mean, you have to go to your doctor, right, to get some kind of like some sort of medication that'll keep your focus going, and then we'll be able to.
It's
going to
be interesting. I went through a period a few years ago where I was listening to The Simpsons a lot to go to sleep, and then any time after, even if I wasn't trying to go to sleep, if I would have The Simpsons on, I would instantly get really tired.
Right.
So it might be that kind of thing. It might be a very tired podcast.
If you guys have ever wondered what the underside of the Enterprise looks like in slow motion as the theme song blares for 20 minutes, we are about to get into it with the motion picture. But yeah, there's a couple episodes of TOS left. Thank you guys for listening. I know the show isn't everybody's favorite, but people seem to have enjoyed going through it. We'll have a couple left anyway after this. But Clay, thank you very much for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
That's it. Spectre of the Gun. See you guys later.